Paul Nolte, the senior wealth advisor and market strategist at Murphy and Silvest, talking about what a China syndrome means financially these days. Hey, Paul, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be back with you again. Thank you.
So I know what the China syndrome is. I remember the movie. I read the book. Now, what are you talking about?
It's a couple things. One is, you know, again, really more talking nuclear, which is now back on everybody's radar. We're hearing from some of the tech companies. Microsoft is one wanting to open up one of the Three Mile Island generators and take all of the power that's being generated to run its data centers. And that's, again, a direct result of AI. The second part is really more dealing with China itself, and what they've done is push out a lot of money into their economy, and that money doesn't necessarily stay all in China. Money getting pushed out anywhere around the world tends to be fungible, so it makes its way around the world as well. So that added money, probably a boost to the global economy and potentially at least the stock prices in the short run.
Two things to talk about there. We'll get to the China part of the China story in a minute. But in the meanwhile, that does say something about the energy needs of computers and artificial intelligence, doesn't it? If Microsoft says, let's take what we can salvage from Three Mile Island, take all of the power that it'll generate and use that for our company's purposes. Is that what you said?
Yep, that's exactly it. And what we've seen as a result of that from a lot of utility stocks, and it's something certainly that the state of Illinois is very interested in, too. They would like to be a big data center as well. But we're seeing utility companies do very well here in the marketplace. They've had a pretty good run. Some of it is because of lower interest rates. That helps the sector. But we're also seeing a pickup in general demand for electric power.
I don't think any of us, I certainly can't or have not gotten my head around artificial intelligence and, for that matter, just all of the storage that we've been using in this country for the last few decades, couple decades, I guess, around the world. But it requires computers that need electricity to store that data, or storage facilities to store that data. And the power's got to come from somewhere. And there's no end, I would imagine, Paul, to the demand that represents.
We don't know where that end is. And certainly with AI and the computing power that is required to, again, have these computers go through all these iterations on a regular basis and get fed the data and spit out, you know, responses, et cetera, there's a much higher energy usage than we probably have seen over the prior 3, 4, 5 years. So it's something that is directly related to AI. We're seeing those data centers being built very close to, in many instances, those power plants. So they don't have to worry about having it come over power lines. They're setting up those plants right next door.
Wonder if this says something about nuclear generation then in the future, too.
I think it's got a possibility. I mean, certainly, you know, we've closed a lot since Three Mile Island. I think there's still a lot of potential for nuclear in the U.S. It is relatively clean. We have some issues getting rid of the waste. But I think in general, it's one of the more efficient uses of power.
Okay, we're talking with Paul Nolte, the senior wealth advisor and market strategist over at Murphy and Silvest. We were playing with the idea of a China syndrome. Just to bring China back into the conversation for a minute, Paul, what does the infusion of money by China mean? What are they doing and how does that impact us?
Well, what they're trying to do is get their economy going. It's been very, very slow. So they're injecting a few billion dollars into their banking system to improve the housing situation that they have. But that money winds up in their economy, and it means that they're going to be buying more goods and services from around the world. Not everything that China consumes is strictly within China's borders. So it can move around the world. So higher energy demands, higher demands for metals, et cetera, goods as well. So there is a potential for an increasing in demand for stuff over the next 6 months or so. And that can have an impact, negatively so, on inflation, meaning that inflation could stay a little stickier as that demand ramps up. So when you see these types of monetary policy changes, or certainly where they're looking to infuse money into the economy, it has an impact around the world. It's not immediate, but it is an impact around the world.
You want to talk about oil prices a little bit relative to what's going on in the Middle East or anywhere else?
Well, I mean, that's been kind of a slow go. We've seen energy prices pick up the last 2-3 weeks. And certainly the Middle East has been a mess for a year. We're at the anniversary of a year ago. Prices have been very low for quite some time, but we're starting to see pricing pick up. Commodity prices in general are up 6%. Just over the last 4 weeks. A lot of that is energy related. So we could see that continue to pick up. Again, the good news is the United States continues to produce an awful lot of oil, but there is a demand pickup that we're starting to see globally as well. And that could keep pressure on oil prices, keeping pressure on the high side for oil prices in the coming couple of months.
Oppenheimer Asset Management says they're still bullish. Are you?
I'm a little more concerned because most of it is valuation related. The valuation of the stock market, especially the S&P 500, is as high as we saw in 2000, 1929. Those periods were marked by very similar euphoria around technology. Today's euphoria is around AI. I'm not sure that the short term, yeah, we can go higher because everybody's excited about it. Over the next probably 3 to 5 years, I would say returns are probably in the low to mid single digits, and that's competitive with what we're seeing from treasuries or corporate bonds at this point. So we're looking at the bond market a little bit more favorably than we are the equity market. We still want to be in stocks for the long term, but we think those returns are going to be a lot less than what we've experienced over the last 10, 15 years.
But do you like bonds because they seem safer, or you don't think they're going to outperform stocks, do you?
No, I think that possibility does exist, because if you look just at the valuation of the market, it's at 25 times earnings or so. You take one over that number, that's 4%, giving you an effective 4% earnings yield. You can get 4% in the bond market here. So I think that possibility exists. Again, in the short run, maybe not so much. But over the last, say, 2.5 years, the equal weight S&P 500, so take out the Mag 7, bonds have been very competitive with the rest of the market. And that possibility continues to exist.
Talk a little bit about housing, the supply of that, and interest rates relative to that.
You know, interest rates have come down. Certainly the 10-year bond has come down in value, and mortgage rates are tied off of that. So mortgage rates have come down. We picked up here a little bit this last week, but I think that's also created an opportunity for a lot of people to refinance that have gotten into a house over the last year or two where rates were north of 6%, 7%. So we're seeing refinancing activity pick up. We're seeing a little bit of a pickup in the housing market in general around the U.S. Because of those lower rates. People have been on the sidelines waiting for that to happen or getting into the market. Home construction is still an issue. You know, we're not building enough to meet the supply. So as a result of that, housing prices will probably still be on the high side.
I think there's a lot of people who could sell or would sell or would buy, but they're just waiting either for that supply to go up and prices to drop, or interest rates to come down and affordability to go up. I wonder what advice you would have for people that are ready to make a move but are waiting for something.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a difficult decision. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember double-digit mortgage rates, and you just jumped. And my counsel with a lot of clients is when you're moving into a house and assuming you're going to stay in that house 5, 10-plus years, the worst mortgage payment you're going to have is today. We could in 5 years, maybe 10 years, refinance that mortgage, bring down the mortgage payment Maybe interest rates come down and allow that to happen again. So if you can see your way clear and being in and being able to afford the house today as it is with that cash flow, that's the worst it's going to be. And you can get that cash flow or the mortgage payment down in those future years as long as you can swallow it in the first year or two.
Right. Meaning if you can afford it now, you'll be able to afford it.
You'll be able to afford it. Yeah, absolutely. And you'll be able to afford it better later. And you'll have enjoyed at least some appreciation in the home as well.
This story is sitting over at NewsNationNow.com. NewsNation, our parent company or our allied company, we're all owned by the same company. An analysis released today by the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget suggests a Kamala Harris presidency would increase the national debt over 10 years by $3.5 trillion. The same analysis says former President Trump's ideas would heap another $7.5 to $15 trillion on the national debt. People don't talk about that number much, do they? Either of those campaigns.
No, and it's something that hasn't been discussed in probably 30 years. It used to show up regularly, and my standard joke has been the fiscally responsible party is always the one that's out of power.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, both candidates have both parties, I should say, have demonstrated an ability to spend an awful lot of money without regard to where that money is going to be coming from to pay for it. So it's either going to be printing more dollars or higher taxes. Or a combination of both. To this point, we haven't had to worry about it. And it's been a worry that's been around since the 80s. We've seen worse situations in Japan where their debt to GDP is even higher than ours. But again, something that has been kicked down the road for a long time. And we've all been wondering, when is it going to hit the wall? And we're not sure when that's going to be, but there will be a day of reckoning at some point.
You almost wonder if the number is just so large. I mean, you can't even comprehend it, so you just ignore it. If it was a number that we could, you know, imagine in terms of the conversations we have, like, oh, it's close to that number, and these are all numbers, but at least I've heard of that number before, maybe we would be more motivated. But now it's like Pluto. It's so far away. I know it's out there, but I don't know how to get there, and I'm not going to worry about it. That's the attitude right now.
I think there's some of that. Certainly some of it is, you know, hey, I'm getting this money from the government for this, that, or the other thing. And now when we talk about tightening our belts and we're going to have to cut this service, that service, et cetera, everybody's like, well, no. You cut John's stuff. Don't cut my stuff. You know, you don't need what you're getting. I need what I'm getting. And that becomes a very difficult discussion, and nobody wants to have that discussion. And so it tends to permeate and continues to grow over a period of time.
Paul Nolte is a senior wealth advisor and market strategist at Murphy and Silvest. Nice to talk to you, Paul. Thanks for helping us out today.
I always appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Jim Dahlke's here, the director of communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Jim, let's get started talking a little bit about some venture capital funding in Chicago. What's story one today?
Yeah, you know, John, we're talking about a startup today that's looking to take on Google. It's a big task here, but this Chicago startup is taking on the search giant with its AI-powered search engine. The company is called iAsk, and they said last week that they raised a little over $4 million to fund its AI search engine that it says is actually outperforming the other AI platforms in terms of accuracy that are in this space. iAsk launched just last year, but already actually has some impressive user numbers. People that are using the search engine here, which are actually primarily Gen Z users so far, have done more than 350 million searches since last year, seeing about 1.5 million searches per day. And like I said, its accuracy, you know, as it's being measured right now, is outperforming AI juggernauts like OpenAI's ChatGPT and even Google's own Gemini. And so, you know, John, the use case for AI search is really clear. You know, Google results, you know, for those who do a lot of Googling, have probably seen that they've gotten worse over the last few years. And really, Google has been loaded up with ads and firms that specialize in search engine optimization. So, you know, what you're seeing on Google more often than not is, you know, somebody who's paid for their query to show up at the top, or kind of game the system, right, to have their response show up super high up. So, you know, the promise of AI search, at least from an industry perspective, is you're going to get a better answer to your question. Of course, the problem that iAsk faces is that its competitors have raised much, much more funding, like billions more. So $4 million in funding for this company is really just a drop in the bucket compared to what the likes of OpenAI and Google and Anthropic have got at their disposal. But, hey, this is a big swing from a Chicago startup. As you know, we kind of talked about the city's sort of ethos as a startup ecosystem is a lot of B2B software, and this is a very big swing, you know, generative AI type startup play. And so a handful of Chicago startup investors are backing this company, including Corazon Capital here in Chicago. So it'll be very curious to see how iAsk is able to grow, but hey, some encouraging user numbers, at least only 1 year in.
Yeah. So an app like that is different than, like, there's Google searching, Bing, I guess, still is in that space. And that's where you ask it something and it just shows you a bunch of related articles and you generally find your answer. AI is a more powerful or iterative version of that, right? It'll actually write you an essay about it. It'll personalize the response. That's the difference between Google and artificial intelligence, right?
That's right. So rather than showing you, you know, 10 articles about, you know, that talk about sort of, you know, let's say you want to learn how to change a flat tire, right? And rather than 10 articles that kind of answer that question, you know, iAsk and sort of these, you know, AI search engines will give you the answer right after you ask it. And so really it's less clicking, it's less searching around, and it's more about presenting, you know, the correct information right in front of you. And so, I mean, that's really the name of the game here. And, you know, AI search is going to be a big thing. Obviously, you know, Google with the kind of lead that it already has in search, certainly you would expect them to kind of really, you know, continue to ramp up their AI efforts. They're already doing a lot with their Gemini product. And so everybody who's in search is already kind of at a disadvantage, but, you know, certainly OpenAI, another one that thinks it's ChatGPT, is already a leader in the space as well.
It's interesting because I pretty much exclusively Google, because I just type what I want in my browser, and that's a Google search bar or browser, and so I automatically get that. But when I do, not infrequently, especially if it's a commercial enterprise, the first, or say a hotel issue or something, the first sometimes page will just be ads, and they won't be the company or the agency I want. So then you got to spend more time kind of clicking through to find the resource that you want. iAsk, you're telling me, kind of is circumventing that. How does somebody access iAsk? Is it a website? Is it an app I download? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's iAsk.ai. So yeah, people can access it now. Just sort of recently kind of came out under stealth or out of its beta, and so it's now open to everyone for asking queries. And you mentioned, you know, the companies that are kind of paying to show up on Google. I mean, there's entire economies that exist on sure, you know, being those early search traffic. And so what we're seeing with you know, AI search is that it's really going to be disruptive to entire business models, like, think, you know, hotel bookings and travel and all kinds of industries that are really reliant on kind of being that number one, two, or three search result on Google to generate a lot of their revenue. Right. You know, as you go through search in generative AI, that could be a big deal to their business.
Yeah, I wonder what that says to all the businesses that benefit from SEO. Like, if I pay extra, now I'm on the first page and I get hits. If people are tired of that model, they're going to find another way to get what they want. And maybe I don't have a way to land on the front page of iAsk. I've told the story before. I don't know if I've told it to you, Jim, but a friend of ours here at the radio station, a nutritionist, Don Jackson Blattner, was going to go on vacation with three generations of her family, and they all had varied interests, and she didn't know where they could all go and have a good time. So she went on to one of these artificial intelligence sites and described her family and said, here's what we want to do and here's who we are and where should we go? And it popped up an answer. Like, it said, here's where you should go and why. And it wasn't 22 resort websites. And they went there. And they had a great time. And that wouldn't happen unless you did a lot of searching on your own, or in 1 second, AI told them.
You know, AI is going to disrupt, you know, 2 decades plus of trip travel planning, right? I mean, it's the way that travel agencies and hotels and experiences have thought about advertising their services on search, you know, that is going to change. I mean, iAsk, which is a teeny little search startup, has already had 350 million queries in the last year, right? So there's, you know, Google has about a 90% market share on search, which has, you know, for a long time felt impenetrable. I'm not sure that it is anymore, because I think these AI products are certainly nipping at its heels. And, you know, Google's going to have to really continue to ramp up its Gemini search product to take a piece of this. One last thing, I'll mention on this, you know, as far as, you know, media firms and other kind of websites that rely on that Google link, Google clicking from searches, you know, one of the websites that, you know, got a lot of traffic was an entire website dedicated to famous actors' ages. You know, how old is Jennifer Lawrence? How old is Brad Pitt? And so people will click on their website after Googling that. Well, Google started to snippet those responses and give it to you on the page rather than getting into the article itself, and its traffic absolutely plummeted. And I think we're going to see a lot of instances like that where a lot of companies have benefited by showing up early on Google and then being clicked into. Well, hey, guess what? We don't have to actually click into that article anymore.
If you're wondering what's that vacation destination, I'm just Googling. I'm looking for it now because I don't remember exactly which one it was, but I will answer that in just a minute. I've got just another minute or so left with you. What other story is on your radar today?
Yeah, so a Chicago venture capital firm, Arch Venture Partners, just a couple weeks ago announced that it raised $3 billion for its latest fund. This is a biotech focused venture capital firm in Chicago, really now one of the largest, if not the largest, venture firm here in the city. $13 billion now in its latest fund. This firm is about 40 years old, and really is a primary backer of biotech startups really across the country. They can write checks between $50,000 and up to $150 million in a single deal. And as Chicago tries to gain some momentum in the life sciences and biotech space, there's a few things you need. You need access to lab space and access to capital. And so having a very large venture firm in your backyard that can write a check up to $150 million is certainly a big deal for Chicago's biotech scene.
Hmm. Okay, good to talk to you, Jim Dahlke. Let's visit again soon. Thanks for the heads up on all of that.
Thank you, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news now with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago saw an increase in business during this year's NASCAR race over the July 4th weekend. It generated $128 million, a 17% increase over last year. A study commissioned by Choose Chicago said the race drew 12% more visitors than in 2023. Hotel occupancy rose by nearly 30%. Plans are to have the race back next summer. We're looking at lower gas prices around Chicago. Gas Buddy's survey shows the average price around $3.61, down about 10 cents from last week. Prices are just over 10 cents a gallon lower than a month ago and over 23 cents a gallon lower than a year ago. Costco is adding platinum to its lineup of precious metals. They retail for over $1,000 a piece and are sold only online. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Time for the business of food. Time for Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's begin with a man on the phone from London, and he's got a reason to brag.
We have been ranked the number one steak restaurant in the world.
And there is a Chicago connection. After, I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at Chevy. DriveChicago.com. On the phone is
Will Beckett, and I'm one of two founders of the steak restaurant brand Hawksmoor.
And Will and his partner, who started the aforementioned World's Best Steakhouse in London 18 years ago, decided Chicago, a city known for its world-class steakhouses, needed another one. Really?
My view on world-class cities like Chicago is the question, you know, can Chicago handle and enjoy another world-class restaurant? Of course it can.
So, in late June, Hawksmoor opened its second U.S. restaurant.
It's in a beautiful old building which you may also remember being Michael Jordan's restaurant way back in the day.
Yeah, and Hawksmoor is H-A-W-K-S-M-O-O-R. And what's the story behind that name?
Our first restaurant was near a beautiful church in London built by one of the English Baroque architects called Nicholas Hawksmoor. And we named it after him.
There are a couple of nods to Chicago history, including a steak topped with oysters.
A 19th century Chicago restaurateur called Herbert Kinsley, who had a restaurant called Kinsley's in Chicago. And he would serve steaks piles high with about 30 oysters. We thought that was a bit extreme, but we serve ours with 3 grilled bone marrow oysters.
And for dessert, there's Atomic Cake.
Yeah, which is like a classic Southside cake. Again, a nod to some of the great things that happen in Chicago.
Something else about Hawksmoor, it's one of the few restaurants that is a B Corporation.
B Corp is like a mark for businesses that conduct themselves a certain way, right? With a kind of positive environmental impact, positive people impact, local communities. So we talk about it as running a business with integrity and purpose.
Hawksmoor, yet another steakhouse in Chicago. It's been open a little over 3 months, and how's it going?
It's going great, and may it continue for many, many years.
On the food calendar, it's National Chocolate-Covered Pretzel Day, it's National Frappe Day, and National Propane Day. Our farmers use a lot of propane to dry grain after it's harvested. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
We got a few minutes left with Melissa Conyers-Urban, the treasurer for the city of Chicago. There's an empowerment event coming up. Let's talk about that. Melissa, thanks for joining us on WGN. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much. Good afternoon.
So catch me up on building wealth today for tomorrow.
Yes, this is our fourth annual Building Wealth Today for Tomorrow Summit, where we focus on really building the financial empowerment of residents. That's to sum it up in just a few words. But we will have so many things. I call it a capstone event. Everything is under one roof, and it's all geared towards financial empowerment. We know that so many residents desire to invest in themselves, and they ought to be able to do so. Residents that unfortunately do not have the credit scores needed to purchase their own homes, or unfortunately do not have access to capital to start their own business, or they may already have their own business but want to expand it and need resources and assistance in doing so. We also have residents that may need help in how to start investing 101, or how to start preparing for retirement. All of those things will be under one roof on this coming Saturday, October 12th, at the UIC Forum, which is right at Roosevelt and Halsted, right in the middle of the city, no matter where you live. Meet us at UIC this coming Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And by the way, we have some experts, whom we all may know, some familiar names, that will be present on that day to help us, to really teach us about financial empowerment and building that generational wealth within our families and sustaining it. And like starting at 11 a.m., we'll have Lorenz Tate, Chicago's own, that will be on the main stage. At 1 p.m., we have Matthew Knowles, who's the father of Beyonce, on the main stage that will be talking to us on how to build generational wealth and the keys to success, as well as 3 p.m., again, Chicago's own, Kiki Palmer will be present as well, talking about the longevity and being able to sustain generational wealth. And so me, as treasurer of Chicago, as you know, I've been in office elected since 2019, I am not going to be happy. I'm not going to be satisfied until we are all talking about building generational wealth for our families, no matter what community we reside in the city of Chicago. That is a right for all of our families. So no matter where you are on the spectrum of financial empowerment, whether it's beginning, intermediate, or advanced, we need you to be there this coming Saturday, October 12th, from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. And by the way, I encourage everyone to register in advance. You don't have to, but to avoid the lines, I encourage you to register at ChicagoCityTreasurer.com.
I was going to ask a bunch of questions, Melissa, but I think you've answered most of them now.
I'm so excited. I just want you to know, like, this means everything to me. If you're familiar with my background, you know that I'm a young lady that was born in Inglewood, raised on the West Side by a single mother, first in my family to go to college, went on to receive my MBA in finance, And for me to have this opportunity to represent the people and leverage the office of Chicago City Treasurer to help the people, this is the biggest financial empowerment summit in the Midwest. So we want residents. And by the way, I don't think I mentioned that everything is free.
Yep.
We do not want any barriers to residents having access to this life-changing event this coming Saturday. So please register at ChicagoCityTreasurer.com.
ChicagoCityTreasurer.com. So if it's just a personal finance issue or maybe small business finance, these are a series of workshops to help, right?
That's right. And actually, not only will we have workshops and we'll have people out on the exhibit floor, different associations. I know this is your banking hour. So we'll have like Self-Help Credit Union, Liberty Bank, First Eagle Bank. We'll also have U.S. Bank, Chase Bank, BMO.
Yeah.
We'll have credit bureau agencies that will be in the house. We'll have CDFIs, those are our community development financial institutions. So for some small business owners that may not necessarily qualify for the financial institutions that we're all so familiar with, there are also CDFIs that really help small business owners as well. But then we'll also have workshops to help with those that desire to become a homeowner, those that want to start investing 101. But also, I'm excited this year, what's new is that we'll have a youth and young adult corner where, you know, so many youth and young adults, they spend a lot of time on social media, for example. Well, why not make money doing that? Become an entrepreneur at a young age. So we'll have some influencers that will also be present this coming Saturday. So it's great. We want the parents to come, but bring your young people as well so we can help financially empower them.
Melissa Conyers-Irvin is the treasurer for the city of Chicago. One more time now, ChicagoCityTreasurer.com. You can register in advance. You can do it at the event, but best you do it now, ChicagoCityTreasurer.com. Melissa, well done. Good luck.
Thank you so much, and thank you for always having us and making certain that you're keeping the residents informed about what's going on to empower them. Thank you so much.